Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Congressional leaders and the White House met late into the evening last night. And while both sides say the talks were productive, there is still no agreement on cutting the budget, the federal budget, that would prevent a federal government shutdown set for midnight on Friday. This is kind of the same story, but different players, as what happened back in 1995 and 1996. Then it was Democratic President Bill Clinton and Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich. Now it's Democrat Barack Obama and House Speaker John Boehner.
And we're going to keep on pounding away at this thing because I'm absolutely convinced that we can get this done. There is no reason why we should not be able to complete a deal. There's no reason why we should have a government shutdown.
We've made clear that we're fighting for the largest spending cuts possible. We're talking about real spending cuts here, no smoke and mirrors.
That was President Obama and House Speaker John Boehner speaking about the ongoing budget negotiations and the threat of a government shutdown. That's our topic for this hour on All Sides. We welcome your calls. Where should we cut? Should we cut? Who do you blame for a possible shutdown? 292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. The rundown, we'll have Congressman Pat Tiberi. He's scheduled for the bottom of the hour at 10:30 this morning, then U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown at about quarter of the hour. So if you'd like to talk to them, get on the line as well. First, though, let's go to Jack Torrey. He is the Columbus Dispatch, Washington, D.C. Bureau reporter. He joins us on the phone from Washington. Welcome to All Sides, Jack.
Well, glad to be here.
It's been a long few days for negotiators, both on the, on both sides of the aisle down there in the House and in the White House as well. How far apart are the two sides?
Well, in terms of numbers, they're a considerable distance apart. The Democrats are willing to what they're trying to do is to pass a spending measure that would keep the government operating until the end of the fiscal year on September 30th. And over that time, the Republicans want to cut about $60 billion in spending that would have been anticipated in President Obama's budget. The Senate Democrats have offered something in the range of 33, of which 10 they've already cut through the earlier two stopgap measures. So in terms of numbers, they're far apart. In actuality, they're arguing over a very tiny amount of money in a very small fraction of the budget. This is a very symbolic fight. Conservatives who were just elected want to show that they can cut as much spending as possible. And people who have fought for the spending increases over the past 2 years don't want to see them cut back.
This is the discretionary portion of the budget, which is the non-defense, non-entitlement, I mean non-Medicare, Medicaid portion of the budget. So it really is only 12% of the overall federal budget.
That is correct. And the only way they will ever balance the federal budget is by dealing with the entitlement programs, as you pointed out, of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Those constitute, if you look at those entitlement programs, which means what that means is they are grow on autopilot every year. That's about 60% of the budget. And until you get your arms around that, you can't balance the budget.
292-8513, if you'd like to jump in and talk about the looming federal government shutdown. Our guest right now is Jack Torrey, Washington, D.C. Bureau reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Are you surprised that it's gotten to this deadline of, you know, it's about 24 hours away?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, we have divided government here in Washington. We have a very determined new House majority filled with a lot of conservatives who were just elected and are wanting to cut government spending. And quite frankly, you have in the Senate people like Senator Schumer of New York, a Democrat, who I think is almost goading the Republicans into shutting the place down. And then up until this week, you've had a president who basically has kind of phoned in sick on the budget. He just hasn't. He's been a very passive player. And so when you have that type of an atmosphere, it makes it much more difficult to forge the necessary compromises. Boehner keeps pointing out, John Boehner, the Republican congressman from Southwest Ohio, who's the speaker, keeps pointing out that the Republicans control one half of one third of the government and that they do not want to shut the government down. At the same time, though, his hands, he's been restricted on how much he can offer because a number of conservatives have indicated they might not vote for a spending plan that doesn't have deeper cuts. Mm-hmm. So that's the situation we're in. I have I don't like guessing as a reporter, but my 51-49 guess is that they will come up with a deal.
Before the shutdown?
Right.
Yeah. So today came out this morning that the House Republicans are looking to extend one of these, you know, continuing resolutions, you know, extend the deadline another week. Is that going to go anywhere?
Well, it doesn't go anywhere in the Senate, and it doesn't go anywhere with the White House. This is Boehner playing hardball politics. This mm-hmm. this continuing resolution would fully fund the Defense Department so that the soldiers would be paid, but it would cut about $12 billion over a 1 week period. Well, that's unacceptable to the White House. But what it is Boehner's putting the pressure on the Democrats to say, look, we've passed bills to keep the government open. You haven't passed anything in the Senate. And it is, in fairness to Boehner, the Senate has never passed a long-term spending resolution for the rest of this fiscal year. They rejected the original House bill passed in February, which cut the $61 billion. And you'll hear this, the variation of this theme from Pat Tiberi and Sherrod Brown. But the reality is the Senate has never passed its own spending bill for this year. So it's just a way to keep more and more pressure on the Democrats.
292-8513 if you'd like to talk about the looming federal budget shutdown here on All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Our guest, Jack Pittori, he is the Washington Bureau reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Is it more than just money these two sides are fighting over? Is it not just how much to cut, but also where the cuts should come? Democrats seem to want more money for health and education programs and save those from a deeper cuts.
Well, one of the things that's going on is the Democrats are trying to limit. If you can cut, for example, certain programs in the discretionary account and reduce what is known as the baseline, then those cuts extend out through the next few years and you save a lot more money. The Democrats are trying to limit the damage, the amount of cuts to this year. And so as a result, there is a debate not only on the numbers, but what type of a baseline you set up and how long and how much money that will save in the future. But in reality, what you're seeing is a collision of two very different ideas. Mm-hmm. You have a Democratic Party and a president who have spending at about 24% of the gross domestic product, and you have a Republican majority in the House that is very anti-government growth and wants to cut that back to somewhere in the range of 19 to 20% of GDP. These are two very different philosophies. The Democrats believe very strongly that you're going to need to spend money to keep people on Medicaid, to keep Medicare moving. And you have Republicans who are arguing there are limits to what we can do as a nation, and eventually somebody has got to say no. So this will not end no matter if they have a deal this week. This will be part of the 2012 presidential election and the congressional elections. And voters will eventually have to decide, do they want a smaller government that taxes a little bit less, or do they want a larger government that takes care of more people who cannot manage on their own? For example,
this is also the first game of a three-game series too. We have this is the current fiscal year budget. We have the debt ceiling coming up, and then we also have the next year's fiscal budget.
That is correct, and each one gives an opportunity to budget cutters to sort of increase the pressure. The problem that Mr. Boehner has faced is I think he's got a good number of people in his caucus who basically would just as soon see the government shut down. And Mr. Boehner, who was here in 1995 for the mm-hmm. shutdown, has a good memory. The Republicans were blamed in 1995 for shutting the government down, and my guess is they would get blamed this time as well. And I don't think that's a plus for them as a party.
What happens, Jack Tory from the Columbus Dispatch, what happens if the government does shut down at midnight tomorrow?
Well, first of all, people in Columbus won't even notice it over the weekend. You won't know that that there's a shutdown anywhere because the government would normally be closed on weekends anyway. But if it starts going into next week, for example, there's about 8,400 people that work up at the defense centers up in the Whitehall area. Those people who would be deemed not working necessarily directly on national security and protection of life and property issues, which is that's how the military people get to keep their jobs, mm-hmm. those people may face a temporary furlough. You might, if you were trying to get a small business loan next week, you might not be able to get it. If you had been planning on entering a new clinical trial at the National Institutes of Health, you probably couldn't do it. So if you're trying to get a passport, you probably won't be able to do it. It, in many ways, when we speak of a government shutdown, it's in many ways a limited shutdown. The shutdown itself only impacts a certain part of the government.
Social Security checks are still mailed out or electronically transferred to accounts.
Yep.
We're going to get mail on Saturday and on Monday?
You should get mail. The only thing you will do is if you're filing your income tax returns by paper, you may not get your return right away.
Mm-hmm.
If you're filing it by electronically, it would get you would get your return as scheduled on time.
I assume in D.C., though, the effects are going to be felt much more harshly or severely than they are here.
Oh, it's for Washington, D.C., it's a colossal problem. Not only about 100,000 of the 800,000 federal workers, many of them are who will be furloughed are in the Washington area, but you also have things like the annual Cherry Blossom Festival that's scheduled for this weekend. That would be canceled. The Smithsonian would be canceled. If you're flying from Columbus to Washington to spend a few days here next week, you might find yourself with not a whole lot to do because most of the parks and the museums would be shut down. Most of the federal agencies would be closed. So you'd be sort of standing around looking at Washington without having much to do there.
This is spring break time, so I'm sure there are more than a few people who have Washington, D.C. plans.
Well, and the other thing, too, is Washington is in many ways a hostile weather environment. And one of the few great times of the year is the spring when the weather is warm but not oppressive and the cherry blossoms are out. So, I don't know why anybody thinks it will be a political plus to be blamed for shutting down the Cherry Blossom Festival.
Now, but you think the Republicans would get blamed for this, or might both sides? Because, you know, polls show that people want both sides to compromise. There is a way that one side could escape blame on this?
I think that the Republicans would almost certainly get the blame because the key group to watch would be the independents who voted for Obama in 2008 and then switched to vote for the Republicans in 2010. My guess is that group's not going to – that's a group of people who want to see government work. They don't want to see it flop. And my guess is that group would be very, very, very unhappy by seeing a government shutdown. I think that would bother them a lot. And the obvious, in the rawest political calculation, you figure Democrats tend to like government and they don't want to shut it down, and Republicans tend to be very skeptical of government. So, I just think right now the Republicans are almost certainly going to face a bigger problem. The other problem too is the man with the megaphone is in the White House, and he's going to be out there every day saying, I need these adults, the people to start acting like adults. And the longer this goes on, my guess is it will probably work to the benefit or to the detriment of the Republicans. But having said all that, I don't think anybody emerges with huge pluses on this.
Yeah, if you don't have a mistake like complaining about having to get out of the backside of the plane or anything like that, that was some of the side issues that hurt Speaker Gingrich back in the mid-90s as well. One more quick question,
sure.
Jack Torrey. You've, from the Columbus Dispatch, you've come to Washington for a while. What's it going to take to have serious budget cuts on the federal government?
Are you talking about this week?
No, in general. We all know that there's probably room to cut in the federal budget and that Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and reforms need to happen. But we have commission after commission. We have talk. We have threats of shutdown. But yet we nibble here and there. And then the economy gets better and the problem goes away. And then we get back to another slowdown and we have the same problems again.
Well, to be perfectly honest, it's going to be when the voters decide to send a very clear message. And the clear message is this. Right now, the government is offering more services than voters are willing to pay for. So voters are going to have to decide to put the party in charge that says we'll balance the budget either through raising revenue or through cutting spending. I mean, that's just a very clear choice.
Mm-hmm.
And once that signal is very clearly sent, my guess would in the next year's presidential election, then Congress will react to that. Right now, the message that Congress gets is that And I think most of this is Congress's fault because they tell people that they can have it all. But the fact of the matter is Congress hears, well, we don't want our taxes raised and we don't want Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security cut. Well, once you face that, then you end up with trillion-dollar deficits. Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of great courage on Capitol Hill. They tend to react to what voters want. So until voters understand that the vast majority of the deficit problem comes from the entitlement programs of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, then they have to decide, do they want those services at that level and then pay the taxes for that, or do they want less services?
Okay. We'll have to leave it there. Jack Torrey, a busy day ahead for you, I'm sure. Jack Torrey, the Columbus, Washington Bureau reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, and also author of the book, got to get a plug in here, Henderson's Light, nothing to do with the government shutdown, but a good read nonetheless.
Well, thank you for mentioning it. I appreciate it.
Henderson's Light, it's available on Amazon.
All right.
Jack Torrey, thanks very much for joining us.
Okay.
When we come back, we'll talk more about the government shutdown. Congressman Pat Tiberi is due to join us in about 8 minutes, and then Democrats Senator Sherrod Brown later in the hour. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. At 1 o'clock this afternoon, On Point begins. A government shutdown looms as Democrats and Republicans fight over big budget cuts on Capitol Hill. On Point dives in this afternoon, beginning at 1.
Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from Palmer Miller Nelson Insurance Agency, Incorporated, serving Central Ohio homeowners and businesses since 1855. More information at 261-6300 or online at pmnins.com.
It's 50 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today, a little bit of sunshine as well, and a high of 65. Rain moves into the area late tonight, a low of 50 degrees. Rain likely off and on throughout the day on Friday, a high of 63. And that chance of rain sticks around for Friday night, a low of 51 degrees. And still a chance of rain for Saturday, but warmer with a high of 73. All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I am Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about the looming federal government shutdown, how it might affect the nation, how it might affect Central Ohio if the federal government shuts down at midnight on Friday, and also the bigger picture, where should we cut the federal government's budget, and how deeply should we cut it, and should we be just focusing on these, you know, short budget solutions and discretionary budgets and not looking at the bigger things like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security and defense spending. Joining us now is Arnold Scott. He's the local vice president of the American Federation of Government Employees. Arnold, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
What's the anxiety level for you and your members right now?
Well, the anxiety level for our members is that they're federal workers, and just like all workers, they have a job and they have a passion to perform their jobs, and we don't want to get caught up in all the politics that's going on right now. We just want to do the job that the taxpayers are paying us to do.
What kind of preparations are agencies that employ your members? What kind of preparations are your members doing in case Monday comes and some of them don't have to go to work?
Well, what
we can't go to work.
The way that I understand that it's supposed to happen is that all federal workers have been told to report to work Monday. And then when they come into work, they will decide if there's a government shutdown, they will determine who's going to be essential employees and who's going to be non-essential employees. Naturally, we all think that we're essential, and we are essential for doing the taxpayer's job, but you know, there's employees that they will say that they have to have, and those employees will be required to work and will not be paid because once they pass a budget, then there has to be another piece of legislation that's passed to pay these individuals for the work that they perform. So actually they're working. They'll be required to come into work. They won't be paid for it, and if they don't come in, they can be terminated.
But in 95 and 96, they were paid eventually.
Yeah, in 95, yes. In 96, yeah, they were paid eventually. But there's no guarantee it takes a piece of legislation to make that happen. Naturally, we will be fighting it, and AFG has filed lawsuits because we believe it's unconstitutional for them to require employees to work with, you know, not knowing whether they're going to be paid or not.
We're speaking with Arnold Scott. He's the local vice president of the American Federation of Government Employees. Arnold, which side are you on? Do you blame either the Democrats or the Republicans, the White House or House Republicans?
You know, I'm not on anybody's side, but, you know, all of this nonsense about the federal employees creating this deficit that we've got. The federal employees didn't create the deficit. The deficit came from tax cuts. It came from the bank bailouts, and it came from unfunded wars. That's where it came from. It didn't come from the federal workers didn't create this problem and shouldn't have to sacrifice to fix the problem.
I haven't heard on the federal level where, I mean, there's been some, I think, sort of, you know, residual effect of the battle over the state and public employees, but I've heard more of the criticism of federal programs that we can't do everything and is there room for cutting in some of these agencies?
I'm sure that there's always there's room for doing something better. And that is where, well, I can say when Bill Clinton was in and they went to this partnership, that's exactly how all of the efficiencies that came about within the federal government came about, because employees were sitting down looking at the processes in which they perform, coming up with better ways to do it and ways to save the taxpayers money and implementing those. But that's not happening right now. So it's not the employees' fault.
Were you around? You mentioned Bill Clinton. Were you around in the mid-90s when that shutdown came?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I was.
How is this similar? How is this different than what we experienced back 15 years ago?
Well, I think as far as I'm concerned, it's the same thing. They're shutting the federal government down, you know, and blaming the federal employees for the problems. You know, I tell people all the time, even when you shut the government down, the American public's still going to expect that our veterans will still get the quality service and health care that they deserve, you know, that our military will still be supported. Our war fighters will still be supported, you know, that our retired citizens will still get their Social Security checks and survivor benefits, you know, our air, food, and water still. They're going to expect that it's inspected and that it's safe and that our kids are educated. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, if you want to talk about disasters, disasters is not whether the federal employees are on shutdown or not, that Mother Nature decides whether we're going to have a disaster. That still needs to be done.
Real quick answer. Do you think there'll be a shutdown at midnight tonight or midnight Friday?
I don't know. I hope not. But if it does, what we're telling our people is to come into work Monday and
find out what happens.
We're still going to do the job that the federal taxpayers deserve to be done.
Okay. Thanks very much, Arnold Scott, local vice president of the American Federation of Government Employees. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides on 89.7.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate your time.
All right.
292-8513. If you'd like to join in our conversation, we are talking about the federal government's looming shutdown at midnight on Friday and ongoing negotiations to try to settle this gridlock and also cut the federal budget. Joining us now is Congressman Pat Tiberi from Genoa Township. Congressman, welcome to All Sides.
Good morning, Mike.
Democrats are saying they're willing to cut $33 billion. Last number I saw from the Republican side was $40 billion. Why not just cut the difference and move on?
That's a really great question, Mike. And let me answer that by starting at the beginning of the process so everybody understands this, because it's very, very confusing as to how Washington works. This is a debate that has spilled over from last year. You may remember back in October of last year, October 1st of 2010, the fiscal year began that we're still debating today. And at the end of September of 2010, the Democrats controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House, huge majorities in both the House and the Senate, and they had to pass the first continuing resolution to allow government to stay open. And they did that at that current levels at that point in time through after the election. And the reason why they had to have that continuing resolution is since the first time since the budget resolution that we operate under today was passed, the law that says Congress has to have a budget, since the first time since that was passed in 1974, the House did not pass a budget, mm-hmm. even though the Democrats had huge majorities.
And they had the president in power.
And they had the president, yeah. Mm-hmm. They couldn't agree among themselves for the spending of this fiscal year.
But now,
we're cleaning up that mess.
Okay, let's just fast forward. That's the groundwork. This has
we're
been going.
We're cleaning up that mess. Yeah. Exactly right. And passed.
What's it going to take to reach a compromise?
Well, let me just again fill in. 47 days ago, we passed H.R. 1, mm-hmm. and we had a week-long debate on the floor of the House, specific cuts. It was the $61 billion that you've heard about, and that went over to the Senate. The Senate, in the last 47 days, has not passed anything, nothing. They threw out a number, Michael, and this is the difficulty in terms of this debate. They threw out a number, $33 billion, but that doesn't mean anything. There aren't any cuts. How do we negotiate a bill with a Senate that hasn't passed anything? If you remember when we were growing up, and when you were growing up in New York, right?
Massachusetts. Taxachusetts is where you were.
Taxachusetts. So Syracuse is where you went to school.
That's
I think,
right.
Maybe. When we were growing up, it was the old Jailhouse Rock song on TV about how a bill becomes a law.
That's right.
You remember that?
I'm a bill sitting on
exactly.
Capitol Hill. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's how I thought it was supposed to work. So the House passes a bill. The Senate's never passed one.
Yeah.
And they want us to negotiate in public with ourselves our bill versus a mythical $33 billion. Then there's nothing behind it.
So what do you want as a congressman, as a Republican congressman? Are you willing to – how much are you willing to give to avoid a shutdown tomorrow?
And this has been the difficulty is we cannot negotiate with ourselves in public when the Senate hasn't passed anything.
Well, there's negotiations happening now between Democrats and Republicans at the White House.
Yeah, exactly, finally. But, let me tell you about the lay of the land right now as we speak. For the first time yesterday, Speaker Boehner with Harry Reid, and I will give the president credit because he's finally engaged on specifics in terms of what they're willing to support. And this battle is little compared to the next two battles, mm-hmm. and that is over the next 10 years, the budget and the debt ceiling that's going to come, a vote that's going to come in May. This is small in comparison to those two things. This needs to get done. The speaker has said we need to not have government shut down. Over and over and over he has said that. So this morning, in about 45 minutes, you're going to see on the House side a debate begin that will keep government open another week.
Mm-hmm.
And in that resolution that we're going to pass, it'll fund the military operations for the rest of this fiscal year. And then it'll fund the rest of government for another week.
And it includes a $12 billion cut as well.
It includes a $12 billion cut that was part of H.R. 1.
Mm-hmm.
So these aren't nothing new that hasn't been debated in the past. And it takes it over a week basis. That is correct. We will send that over to the Senate, and we'll see if the Senate either takes that up or sends something else back to us.
Well, all indications are that from the president and other Democrats, they don't want another temporary solution.
Oh, we don't want a temporary solution either. We would have liked to have a solution on this before we even took the majority, as it was supposed to happen last year. So we don't want that either. But the alternative is if there's not an agreement that is made today.
Mm-hmm. Let me get back to
government to shut down.
My original question. You as a congressman, what would you support when you have to cast a vote, assuming this happens either, you know, in the next few days or in the next couple of weeks after a shutdown? How much are you willing to give to move on to the next battle, whether it be the debt ceiling or next year's federal budget?
And I'm not going to give you a number because I'm not part of the negotiating team. I mean, it would be silly. It would be like me if you were a congressman and you and I were and you and I weren't part of the negotiating team, and Obama and Boehner and Reid say, okay, it's going to be 38, and I say, well, I'm not going to vote for anything less than 39. Why would I want to box myself, and why would you want to box yourself in that corner when this is a fluid negotiation between the Speaker, the Senate President, and the President of the United States.
Let me add another element to the negotiations. It's been said that Speaker John Boehner is negotiating with three groups, the Democrats, the Republicans in the House, and the Tea Party. Here's what the Speaker had to say about that.
Listen, there's no daylight between the Tea Party and me.
None?
None. They want us to deal with this crushing debt that's going to crush the future for our kids and grandkids. There's no daylight there.
That was Speaker John Boehner on ABC.
Yep.
Is there any daylight between you and the Tea Party, Congressman Teaberry?
No, I think that there are a lot of folks that are trying to create daylight. And I think the best example of that was Chuck Schumer last week when he was on a conference call with some reporters, and he didn't know the reporters were on yet, with some of his members saying, call these guys extremists. No, tell them that the Tea Party is the one that's wagging the dog here. Listen, the goal is the same, and this bill is small compared to the next two fights.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to get on to the next debate. We don't want government to shut down, but we would like to see, based upon what we heard during the last election, that we need to live within our means.
Let's go to some phones, 292-8513. We've had some people very patiently waiting since the start of the show, and one of them is Al from Dublin. Go ahead, Al. You're on the air with Congressman Pat Teaberry.
Yes. Our biggest immediate problem is to help the economy recover. This costs very little money, in fact, almost none. We have to get consumers, we have to allow them to get jobs, to get money, which they'll spend, which makes markets, which helps everybody and entrepreneurs make more profit. The deficits can be solved when the economy's recovering. It's not that gigantic or that bad a problem.
We got other calls waiting here, Al, so I'm going to get the congressman to respond to that. Thanks very much for the call.
Well, I sit on a committee dealing with Ways and Means, Mike. I think you know that. We deal with taxes. We deal with entitlements. And I've talked to dozens and dozens of CEOs and CFOs. And the biggest problem to job creation in America today is uncertainty and a tax code and a regulatory environment that's not competitive compared to the rest of the world. This is part of that, the uncertainty, because a lot of these people think that we're going to see taxes go way, way up. And so what we're trying to do is both provide tax reform, and that's going to be in Paul Ryan's budget, as well as in the Ways and Means Committee debate.
Paul Ryan,
entitlements are the ones that are driving up this huge debt and deficit. The president hasn't shown leadership. We've decided that we need to lead to provide a better future for our kids, and the caller's right. Ultimately, this is about creating more jobs and creating a better economy, get more people to pay taxes, and that'll help solve part of this problem.
The president says that this ongoing fight and an additional 1 week extension of this deadline also creates uncertainty and hurts the economy. Is he incorrect there?
No, he's not incorrect there. We wish that we wouldn't be in this position, and if we would have had a budget passed a year ago, again, we're cleaning up our mess from last year, and we would like to have this passed us. We're the only ones that have passed a bill. Mm-hmm. The Senate hasn't passed a bill.
Let's go back to the phones. Rod, you've also been waiting very patiently. You're on the air with Congressman Pat Teaberry.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. According to Mother Jones Magazine, studies published in Mother Jones, 83% of the country's wealth is controlled by the top 20% of the population. This group has also benefited from tax breaks and taxpayer bailouts of various industries, and have been busy exporting jobs overseas. I'm wondering, what's being asked of them? How come we're not talking about tax increases for the ultra wealthy in this country?
Okay, Congressman Pat Teaberry.
47% of Americans pay no taxes. That's the high income tax. That's the highest in our history, and we're fast approaching 50%. We have the second highest corporate tax rate in the world. Procter & Gamble is a perfect example. Procter & Gamble is a great Ohio company. The best jobs that they have in the world are in Cincinnati, Ohio. Their highest paying jobs are in Cincinnati, Ohio. Their market and their growth is not in the United States. It's in the rest of the world. And so over 60% of their market now and growing is outside of America. The cost of doing business, both on the tax and regulatory front, is much cheaper elsewhere. And so their job growth is also outside of the United States. The big problem is if we don't change our tax code, they don't have to be headquartered in Cincinnati, Ohio. Who would have thought in our lifetime, Mike, that Anheuser-Busch would not be an American company?
But
this
I know,
is a real problem.
I've heard that the corporate tax rate is at 36%, the highest in the world.
Industrialized world.
But then you also hear about GE getting not paying any taxes, but actually getting money back from tax incentives because of the loopholes.
Exactly.
To say that we have the highest corporate tax rate without saying there are loopholes that allow companies to pay little or no taxes is inaccurate.
Absolutely right. And the GE example and the Procter and Gamble example are two reasons why we need to do comprehensive tax reform, because there's no reason why GE should be paying zero taxes. Now, having said that, the IRS is located in GE's corporate office. They are there all the time. GE hires very expensive tax lawyers and accountants to figure out all the loopholes that they can take advantage of, including making Energy Star appliances, and they get credits for doing that to go against their income.
But Congressman, if the problem that you've talked about, this is the first of the smallest of three battles that are going to be waged. If the problem is as big as you describe, don't we have to do something on the revenue side, whether it be increasing taxes or closing tax loopholes, in addition to the cutting?
We do have to close tax loopholes. I have said that, and there's bipartisan support for that. The question is what are the loopholes that you do? But yes, you got to broaden the base. And you've got to close some of these tax loopholes that when you see somebody like GE pay zero in taxes, it's wrong. If you owned a small business, you have an inability to hire the best tax lawyers and the best accountants and CPAs to figure out, how expensive is this going to be for me to hire these people to figure out how I can reduce my tax rate. That's why you have to simplify our tax code. The complexity is causing us to spend way too much time and money on and mostly from the high corporate level on trying to comply with a very, very difficult system that's not very competitive or compassionate.
Congressman Pat Seabury, I don't know if you're a betting man, but if you were a betting man, would you say that the government shutdown happens at midnight Friday?
I can only tell you that in talking to the speaker, his belief is that the president in the last 24 hours has become very serious about not allowing the government to shut down either. We don't want government to shut down. Based upon that, I would say that there will be some sort of deal worked out before midnight tomorrow night.
There's been talk that the Republicans would get blamed again if there is a shutdown. Do you believe that?
I think everybody would get blamed. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be good for America, and it wouldn't save money. That's not what the intent is. The intent is to try to save taxpayer money, and a government shutdown wouldn't do that.
Congressman Pat Seabury from Genoa Township, thanks very much for joining us on All Sides.
Thanks, Mike.
We'll return, and when we come back, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown will get the Democrat side of this argument when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our daily news loop e-newsletter at wosu.org/email.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Spend some time getting caught up on what's happening in your world every Friday night on WOSU-TV. Starting at 8, it's Washington Week. For local news, watch Columbus on the Record at 8:30. And then continuing at 9, it's the McLaughlin Group. And at 9:30, PBS presents Need to Know. It's a program that focuses on an innovative broadcast and web approach to news gathering and reporting. Spend your Friday night with WOSU-TV. That's tomorrow night, beginning at 8. And in 20 minutes, starting at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides begins, and we'll hear about the challenges facing Japanese automakers in the U.S. as a result of the recent earthquake and tsunami. Join us for All Sides beginning at 11. Currently 51 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today, a little bit of sunshine and a high of 65. Rain showers move in tonight, a low of 50 degrees. Showers are likely throughout the day on Friday, a high of 63. And that chance of rain sticks around for Friday night, a low of 51. All Sides with Ann Fisher with guest host Mike Thompson continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Well, Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking about cutting the federal budget and the looming federal government shutdown. Deadline is midnight on Friday if the two sides cannot reach an agreement, either to extend the negotiations by another week or to reach an agreement in total on this fiscal year's budget. Joining us now is Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown from Washington. Senator Brown, thanks for joining us.
Good. Glad to be with you. Thanks.
Why didn't the Democrats take care of this back in the fall when you had majorities in both the House and the Senate and, of course, President Obama in the White House?
Well, we thought we did. We had an agreement, we thought, with both parties to do the continuing resolution, or actually to do a real supplemental appropriations. It was then not just a continuing resolution up through October 1st. And I remember the day I was standing on the Senate floor with the appropriations chairman from Hawaii and the majority leader, and the appropriations chairman looked crestfallen because the Republican members of the Senate, we had a majority, but we don't have 60, but we did not have 60 votes, said they're not going along. And so all of this, you know, all of this is as a result of that.
So because the complaint is that the Senate has never approved a budget bill. Is that why? Because you needed the 60 votes to avoid the filibuster?
Well, that's the Republican talking points. I mean, just like they're trying to say that Democrats are shutting the government down. That's what they say to the press. But when you look at these Republican rallies, these Tea Party rallies, and they start chanting "Shut the government down," and Republican members of Congress are pushing on that. And then you hear in the Republican conference when they're meeting in the House. Someone the other day, it might have been the speaker, I'm not sure, mentioned, but the news report said they mentioned the government shutdown, and almost a standing ovation was from many saying, yeah, shut it. I mean, it's unfortunate because John Boehner's figure asking for the $73 billion in cuts, the president and the Senate Democrats have said yes to that number. And then John Boehner, because of the pressure from his very conservative,
You mean $33 billion in cuts, right?
Well, 33 starting with the 41. I mean, it depends on how you write it. But either way, whatever the number, when they say 100, it's the 41 the president started with, then negotiating 33. That got to 73 or 4. Mm-hmm. Then John Boehner, under pressure from his far, far right freshmen and a few senior members, moved the goalposts to $100 billion. We are willing to. I mean, what many of us would like to do is say we'll cut we'll do $100 billion deficit reduction. But part of it's going to be a millionaire surtax. Part of it's going to be cuts in defense spending. Some of it's going to be eliminating oil subsidies that this government's done far too many years. And we'll get to better than $100 billion. But in the end, this crowd, if you can look at what happened with Congressman Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, his new budget for the next several years is all about more tax cuts for the wealthy, privatizing Medicare. It's the same things they've tried to do for 15 years. Nothing's new in this. More tax cuts. It's as if we're going to shrink the budget deficit by cutting taxes for the rich yet again. And that's why we're at a standstill ideologically. But in terms of practically, we thought we had a deal with Boehner until the freshman pulled Boehner and said, no, we're not going to agree to this. That's why Boehner's – go ahead.
But in his defense, those folks were elected back in November on promises that they would cut the budget drastically. And
those folks are – you know, 75 out of 435 in Congress or whatever, that they're not a majority of even the Republican Party that have insisted on the $100 billion, but they drive their train because they're the most outspoken base of the Republican Party.
So what,
Barack
what's
Obama
the...
got elected,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
And when I hear this whole thing that because the Republican House, they won the election for the House of Representatives in 2010, we should do everything they say. Mm-hmm. No. The public doesn't want any more than in Columbus, as you've observed, the public didn't say eliminate collective bargaining rights. They said balance. They said create jobs. Well, that's not – this is all about ideology. It's about going after – you know, they want to eliminate Planned Parenthood funding. When 3 million American women get their primary – this isn't about abortion or even family planning or birth control. It's about when 3 million American women get their primary health care because of Planned Parenthood, not because of Medicaid.
What's the number you would accept? I mean, if we –
Well, I've accepted the number we're at. I mean, we already – if you start at zero, $73 billion, they want 100, we do 73. What I mean, they don't run the country by themselves, and that's a pretty big compromise. We've agreed to the 73 that John Boehner started with, and yet they're moving the goalposts again. So I don't know how you negotiate that. And as I said, I'm willing, as are many, many in the Senate, let's go to 100, but let's not take it all out of NPR and take it all out of Planned Parenthood and take it all out of education and Head Start and health care and LIHEAP for seniors. Let's also take some of it out of defense. Let's take some of it by canceling some of these subsidies for oil companies. Let's do a millionaire's surtax just to get millionaires' tax rates back to what they were in the Clinton years when we actually had huge job growth in this country, unlike anything since.
We're talking about the federal government shutdown, which is looming at midnight on Friday. Our guest is U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown. Senator Brown, how would you assess the president's leadership on this issue? He's taken some criticism for playing a supportive role rather than a leading role when it comes to these congressional negotiations.
I wish he'd be more active and outspoken.
What would you like to see from him?
I'd like to see him go to the country and say that here's what we've done. Here's how we've compromised. Where we've gone three quarters of the way, and that's not far enough on these budget numbers. And I would like to see the president widen the debate in terms of we want to do even more deficit reduction than they do. And keep in mind, when George, but not to always revisit history, but in 2000, when George Bush became president, we had just created 21 million private sector jobs in this country in those 8 years. The nation had with presidential leadership. We had the biggest budget surplus in American history. After 8 years of President Bush, we were losing 800,000 jobs a month, and we had the biggest deficit in American history. So this whole view that Republicans have been deficit hawks is totally specious. I mean, their view is you cut taxes on the rich, you don't pay for two wars, Afghanistan and Iraq. You do bailouts, giveaways to the drug and insurance industry, and you deregulate Wall Street, and that's what they still argue for. And cut Medicare, and that's going to create jobs and get us to a better fiscal place. Their philosophy hasn't worked in this country.
But Republicans admit that did occur.
But they're still doing it.
They also point out that the deficit has just completely ballooned since President Obama took office.
Because when you lose 800, when you take over as president in 2009, as Barack Obama did, and you're losing 800, 700 and some, not quite 800, I didn't mean to exaggerate a bit, 700 and some thousand, probably more than 750, 700,000 plus jobs, you're losing that many jobs, of course you're going to run huge deficits. But the Republicans want to do the same thing. Look at the Paul Ryan budget. That's their campaign document for the next 2 years, everybody says. I don't know that, but that's what everybody around here is saying. And if you look at his budget document, he's saying more tax cuts for the rich, more cuts in Medicare and Medicaid. Ultimately, privatization of Social Security is the next step. I mean, that's what they always do, and they say they've learned something from the terrible Bush years where the economy, the budget surplus went to a huge deficit, and we got basically no job growth, and we got stagnant wages for those that have jobs.
They want
to do that again.
Senator, I want to go to the phones because people
sure.
have been waiting
sure,
very patiently. Let's go to George. Go ahead, George. You're on the air with Senator Sherrod Brown.
Senator, I have a question about the way you guys report your numbers, which I think is borderline fraud. I mean, you give a 10-year projection. Well, nobody lives with a 10-year projection in government. And you throw these numbers around that are meaningless. Basically, the Democrats are willing to cut 1.5% off the federal government system, and the Republicans are talking about 3%. I think the public would like to see 15 or 20%. You know,
really?
We don't have a taxing problem in this country. We got a problem of you people spending about 130% of what you bring in for the last 10 or 15 years, and you borrow the money from overseas. You know, I mean, spending is the problem.
Okay. George, let's get a response from the Senator.
Well, first of all, we haven't done that for 10 or 15 years. If, George, we had a budget surplus in the year 2000 when you had good stewardship of the budget, with President Clinton, where you explain to people in this country that you want a 15% budget cut. So you're going to cut Medicare 15%, you're going to cut Social Security 15%. The average senior citizen in Bexley or Grove City or Delaware or west side of Columbus on the hilltop, the average senior citizen gets $14,000 a year. You're going to cut that by $2,000 a year? Is that what you want to do? Do you want to cut EPA enforcement for safe drinking water and clean air? We've made huge progress in this country in those things. Do you want to cut food inspection and border inspection 15%? The Republicans aren't willing to make any cuts in defense whatsoever. They're not willing to make cuts in farm subsidies. So they say, well, we want to cut 3 or 4%, but they want to take it out of Head Start and take it out of LIHEAP for senior citizens heating.
So Senator, it's
across-the-board stuff that they talk about not playing fair with the budget numbers.
What's it going to take, though, Senator? We just have a couple minutes left. I mean,
sure.
I think everyone agrees that the deficit is too large and that the debt that the nation has is too large and eventually will come back to bite us if it's not already doing so. What is it going to take? Because there's always that tension. Yes, we want to cut the budget, but we don't want to cut Medicare. We don't want to cut the defense plant in my district. What is the solution to get permanent, real budget cutting on the federal level?
Well, the solution is to make it broad-based, to open up not just the one-sixth of the budget that we're arguing about, the non-defense discretionary, but to go across the board, not to make the same percent cut everywhere, but to open up the whole budget process. That includes defense. That includes making Medicare more efficient.
Do we have to take it out of the hands of Congress? Because we have 535 members with all their interest in their own districts or their own states. It hasn't worked in 40 years.
Well, no, that's not true. It has worked. 10 years ago, as I've said four times already, 10 years ago, we had a budget surplus. We had 21 million private sector jobs created in those 8 years. In the 8 years after, we had 1 million jobs created. We had the huge, biggest budget deficit in history. So we know how to do this if there's a political will. But if you're going to do more tax cuts for the wealthy, as Republican House members apparently want to do, and then you're going to force seniors to pay more for their Medicare, more out of pocket while you cut their benefits, that doesn't work with most of the country. And I'll have that debate anywhere. And there is a way of doing it. We did it in the 90s. We can do it again. But we need a little more intellectual honesty in this debate, frankly.
Real quick.
Sure.
Government shutdown tomorrow. What are the chances?
I don't think so. I think there won't be a shutdown. But if the Republicans insist, and I'm not entirely blaming them here, but if they insist on sending us a bill that has language about abortion and language about school vouchers, let's just keep this on the budget and do it right.
All right. Thanks very much, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown, for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.